Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise and deliver the essential knowledge you need fast. Today, we're diving into something that underpins safety across, well, countless workplaces and daily operations, yet it often goes unnoticed until it's absolutely critical: the lifting operations and lifting equipment regulations, or OLER for short. And look, this isn't just about massive construction cranes. It's a safety net far broader than you might imagine.
Yeah, and what truly illuminates the scope of OLER, I think, is how these regulations, while they sound kind of technical, are really the silent guardians. They're preventing serious incidents in sectors you interact with pretty much daily. Understanding OLER gives you some real aha moments about the fundamental safety structures we just, you know, take for granted.
Precisely. So our mission today is to uncover what LOLR truly means, why its existence is, well, non-negotiable, and the surprising range of equipment it actually covers. We'll even peek into how it's evolving with new technologies. This deep dive is custom tailored for you, our listener, so let's get right into it. Okay, to set the stage then, when exactly did LOLR come into force, and what core problems was it actually designed to solve?
Right. So LOLR was implemented back on December 5, 1998. It came in as a direct response to, frankly, a concerning number of lifting-related accidents and, sadly, fatalities in UK workplaces. Its purpose is really twofold. First, ensure the safe operation of all lifting equipment, and second, to rigorously minimize the associated risks, make things safer, basically. And the impact since 98, it's been profound. It's really contributed to a substantial reduction in serious lifting accidents. Think construction, manufacturing, logistics, those sorts of areas. It effectively set a benchmark for safety that just wasn't consistently met before.
That reduction in accidents really speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It does.
And it brings us to a crucial element of LOLR. You hear about the requirement for regular inspections, specifically these thorough examinations. This isn't just a quick visual check, is it? And who actually performs these vital assessments?
No, you've hit on a real cornerstone of OLR there. A thorough examination is way more than a quick glance. It's a systematic, detailed inspection, looking at the overall condition, structural integrity, wear and tear, operational capabilities, the whole lot. We're talking about a comprehensive assessment to make sure it's genuinely fit for purpose and can handle its intended load safely. And the regulations are very clear. These must be carried out by a competent person. Now, competent here isn't just someone who's, you know, familiar with lifting gear. OLER requires them to have the right blend of practical and theoretical knowledge, relevant experience, and crucially, the independence to make objective judgments about the equipment's safety without sort of undue influence. For equipment lifting people, and actually all lifting accessories too, these checks are required every 6 months. For other lifting gear, it's generally every 12 months. And yeah, assuming it passes, you get that OLER certificate. That's your documented proof of compliance.
Okay, that really clarifies the rigor needed. It's not just ticking a box.
Not at all.
Now, let's talk about the broad reach of OLER. When most people hear lifting equipment, they probably picture, you know, a huge crane on a building site. But the surprising truth is its safety net stretches much, much wider, doesn't it? What are some of the most diverse or even like unexpected pieces of equipment covered?
Absolutely. Yeah, while cranes, tower cranes, mobile cranes are definitely covered, OLER-less scope extends dramatically. Think about the forklift trucks you see zipping around a warehouse, or maybe telehandlers on a farm. They're in. Then consider the less obvious stuff, hoists and winches. Not just in heavy industry, but critically, patient hoists in healthcare settings. Those are absolutely essential for both patient and staff safety.
Ah, patient hoists. Right. Didn't immediately think of those.
Yeah, they're key. Passenger and goods list, too. And everything from offices to hotels, mobile elevating work platforms, MEWPs, you know, the cherry pickers used by maintenance crews, them too. Vehicle inspection hoists in your local garage. And it's not just the big machinery, it's also the crucial lifting accessories, the slings, the chains, the shackles that connect the load. And what's often overlooked is that LOLR covers not just the main lifting equipment, but any attachments used for anchoring, fixing, or supporting it during a lift.
Wow, okay, so if LOLR covers everything from a massive construction crane down to a patient hoist, what kind of workplaces and industries does this actually touch? It sounds like it's almost everywhere.
It truly is. Mm-hmm. You could almost ask, which industries doesn't it touch when it comes to lifting? Because beyond the obvious, like construction, manufacturing, warehousing, logistics, you find it, like we said, in healthcare, ensuring patient hoists are safe, critical. It's in hotels and restaurants for goods lifts. Certainly in every multi-story office building with passenger lifts, automotive repair shops rely on it for their vehicle hoists. Even offshore installations, oil rigs, wind farms, they have extensive lifting equipment, all subject to these regulations. Essentially, yeah, any workplace that uses equipment for lifting or lowering loads, and that includes people, falls under Olalir's purview.
Okay. Given that immense scope, it's also really important to know what isn't covered then. What are some common misconceptions about what falls under Olalir? Why are those distinctions important?
That's a critical point for clarity, yeah. Because while they lift or move things, certain items are not covered by Olalir specifically. Think about escalators, for instance, or fall arrest ropes climbers might use, tipper trucks, dentist chairs, roller shutter doors,
yeah.
Even those simple pallet trucks you see in warehouses. They're out for Olalir.
Okay, interesting. Why this distinction then?
Well, the reason is they don't fall under the specific definition of lifting equipment within Olalir's legal framework. But this is what's fascinating here. While they're exempt from Olalir, they are absolutely not exempt from CE2 regulations altogether. They're still subject to other vital safety rules, like the provision and use of work equipment regulations, PUER.
Ah, PUER, right.
Exactly. So safety is still paramount across the board. It's just managed by different regulatory frameworks, each designed for specific types of kit and operations.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, so if Olalir is this overarching principle for specific types of equipment, how does it translate into concrete actions, you know, on the ground? What are those non-negotiable requirements that businesses absolutely have to get right?
Right. If we had to boil the core pillars of Olalir down to the most impactful bits, the things often overlooked.
Yeah.
There are a few key areas. First, strength and stability. It sounds obvious, but it's foundational. Equipment must be strong enough for its intended use, factoring in all the forces, the accessories, and critically, it must be stable enough to prevent it from, well, tipping over. And every single piece of lifting equipment must be clearly marked with its safe working load, the SWL. This isn't just a suggestion, it's a legally mandated limit. It dictates everything from choosing the gear to planning the lift. Huge safety margin implications.
That SWL marking sounds absolutely crucial then.
It is. Second, the thorough examinations by competent persons we talked about.
Yeah.
Non-negotiable. It's not just the timing 6 or 12 months, but the quality and the independence of that assessment. This is where hidden defects get spotted before they cause, you know, catastrophic failure.
Finds the problems early.
Exactly. Third, planning and supervision. This cannot be overstated. Every single lifting operation, doesn't matter how routine it seems, must be properly planned by a competent person. They need to consider load weight, size, center of gravity, the environment, everything. And it needs appropriate supervision, carried out safely. This proactive thinking stops that risky improvisation that often leads to accidents.
Right, planning prevents making it up as you go along.
Precisely. Fourth, safe use of equipment. This means operators need adequate training. Training on how to use it safely, how to do those pre-use checks, how to secure loads correctly. It's about making sure the people using the gear understand its limits and can spot when something isn't right. And finally, record keeping. Sounds boring, but it's vital. You need to maintain those thorough examination reports, the EC declarations of conformity, details of repairs, maintenance. These aren't just bureaucratic hurdles. They provide a traceable history of the equipment's health and compliance, crucial for spotting patterns or proving you've done your bit.
Those five really underscore the proactive nature of Olalir, don't they? It's not just reactive.
Absolutely not. It's all about prevention.
And that raises an interesting question. How do these core pillars, these sort of universal principles, how do they actually look when applied in vastly different industries? Because I imagine that while the rules are consistent, how they play out can vary wildly.
Oh, absolutely. The application of Olalir adapts significantly to the specific context. Take construction, for instance. You see frequent use of towering cranes, excavators with lifting attachments. Compliance there involves incredibly regular inspections, often in really harsh outdoor conditions, meticulous planning for constantly changing site layouts, and really clear communication protocols, often using banksmen, you know, signalers, to coordinate complex lifts safely.
Right, a constantly changing environment there.
Exactly. Then you look at warehousing and logistics, heavily reliant on forklifts, various hoists. Here, Olalir emphasizes frequent inspections because the kit gets used so much, often round the clock. Clear SWL markings on racking become important too, not just the machines. And specialized training for operators handling all sorts of different goods, often at high speed.
High intensity use.
Yeah. And then there's healthcare, which we touched on. Here, Olalir is just critical. Patient safety, staff safety. You've got patient hoists, operating table hoists, bed movers. Compliance in this sector focuses on incredibly regular, really thorough examinations of that patient lifting equipment. proper staff training on safe patient handling techniques is paramount. And meticulous record keeping for every single piece of kit. You just can't compromise patient well-being.
That really highlights both the adaptability and, I suppose, the underlying consistency of the regulations. Doesn't matter the industry, the core principles, safety, inspection, planning, they remain paramount.
That's it, exactly.
So let's talk consequences. What are the stakes if these regulations aren't followed? And just as importantly, what are the proactive steps, the best practices to make sure you stay compliant?
Well, the stakes couldn't be higher, honestly. The Health and Safety Executive, the HSE, they play a critical role in enforcing LOWER. They conduct unannounced site visits, they review records, they investigate accidents, they have teeth, they can issue improvement notices, basically telling you to fix something by a certain date, or, more seriously, prohibition notices, which can immediately halt operations if they find serious risks, shut you down on the spot.
Wow, okay.
And the consequences of noncompliance, they are severe. Courts can impose unlimited fines, and in the worst cases, gross negligence leading to serious injury or death. Company directors, responsible individuals, could even face imprisonment.
Jeez.
Yeah. And beyond the direct legal penalties, think about the reputational damage. Losing contracts, business opportunities, increased insurance premiums, naturally, and potential civil claims from injured employees seeking compensation. It's abundantly clear when you look at it, the cost of compliance is always, always far less than the potential penalties and the devastating risks of neglecting these regulations.
Given those severe penalties, what's maybe one common misconception or mistake businesses make regarding LOWER compliance, something that often lands them in hot water with the HSE?
Yeah, a really common one is viewing compliance as a sort of one-time event or just a checkbox exercise you do once a year.
Yeah.
Rather than seeing it as an ongoing process that needs to be embedded in daily operations, businesses sometimes think, oh, we had our inspection, we're good. But they overlook the continuous need for, say, competent planning for every lift, or proper supervision, or immediately reporting and fixing defects as soon as they're spotted. To counter this, the best practice really starts with creating a robust culture of safety.
A culture, right? Not just rules.
Exactly. That means regular high-quality training, encouraging employees, really empowering them to report defects or hazards without any fear of blame.
Yeah.
And strong leadership commitment that actively champions safety doesn't just pay lip service. Beyond the culture piece, implementing effective management systems is key. That means robust maintenance schedules, meticulous record keeping, and honestly, digital tools, online databases, they can be a real game changer here, making it easier. Plus, regular risk assessments and proactive preventative maintenance. These systems help ensure safety is integrated, you know, not just bolted on as an afterthought.
That makes perfect sense, focusing on that embedded culture of safety over just like bare minimum compliance.
Precisely.
Now, this raises a fascinating question as we look forward. How is technology shaping the future of lifting safety and maybe LOWER itself? We live in a world of constant innovation, after all.
Yeah, and this is where things get really transformative, I think. We're seeing significant emerging technologies making waves. Internet of Things or IoT devices and sensors, for example. These are enabling real-time monitoring of equipment performance, load dynamics, even environmental factors. This allows for predictive maintenance spotting potential issues before they become failures.
Yeah.
Huge boost for reliability and safety.
So catching problems earlier with data.
Exactly. Then there's automation and artificial intelligence, AI. It's contributing through things like advanced zone control systems, anti-collision systems, using sensors and smart software to automatically halt operations if there's a risk. This can significantly reduce human error, which is often a factor in accidents.
Taking some of the human risk out.
To an extent, yeah. And finally, remote-controlled and autonomous lifting equipment. This is developing fast. It allows operators to work from a safe distance, minimizing their exposure to hazardous areas on site, and it also improves operational flexibility in tricky spots.
Okay, so with all these major tech advancements, IoT, AI, remote ops, are the regulations themselves expected to change or adapt? How do existing frameworks like LOWER actually keep pace with this kind of rapid innovation?
They absolutely have to. It's inevitable. As technology progresses, LOWER regulations will need to adapt. Experts are suggesting we'll likely see new guidelines emerging. For instance, guidance specifically on the safe use and maintenance of AI and automation within lifting systems. Data privacy will become a bigger consideration, too, with all the information being collected by these IoT devices. You know, who owns it? How is it used? New safety standards for remote operations will be crucial, making sure that controlling heavy machinery from offsite doesn't introduce new unforeseen risks.
Right. Controlling a crane from an office needs different rules.
Definitely. We might even see sustainability considerations being incorporated more formally into equipment regulations down the line, and certainly cybersecurity measures. Protecting smart lifting equipment from hacking or cyber threats will become essential. The Health and Safety Executive, the HSE, they're likely to modernize their guidance to reflect these changes. Though, you know, the precise timeline for really comprehensive updates, that's currently unclear. It's a continuous process and evolution.
What an incredible deep dive. We've really unpacked the vital role of Allo, haven't we? Ensuring safety across such a diverse array of industries, from those critical patient hoists in a hospital to the, you know, towering cranes dominating a construction site skyline. It's clear it's a living, evolving set of regulations, constantly having to adapt to new technologies and new ways of working.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, LOLR compliance. It isn't merely about ticking a legal box, is it? It's really a crucial commitment to fostering a genuine, embedded culture of safety, understanding that every single lift carries inherent risk that needs managing. And understanding these regulations, even broadly, makes you a more informed contributor to a safer world. Whether you're directly involved in lifting operations yourself, or maybe just navigating spaces where they occur day to day. And maybe this raises an important final thought for you, the listener. What other everyday regulations, often unseen, often technical, have such a profound and constant impact on our safety and well-being without us even realizing it?
That is a truly thought-provoking question to leave us with. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Yeah. And we really encourage you to continue your own exploration of these crucial, often hidden safety topics. Until next time on The Deep Dive.